This is Talking to America. Our special guest today is Leonard Elliott, a victim of ATF abuse who turned the tables on the ATF. And we're going to talk about his story today. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. And why don't we get started, Leonard? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Zellman. Good to talk to you again. Our business, we've been in business for 50 years. My grandfather and father started Bacon Creek Gun Shop in 1955, Corbin, Kentucky. Get to the point, February 2nd of 2006, we were raided. Now, this was not an inspection. This was a raid. At approximately 9 a.m., in which I opened the store, my parents had not got there yet. Two agents, one who I had met, his name was Thomas Chittum III. He was the lead agent in this. Come through the door, in vest, visibly armed. And I said, Agent Chittum, you know, good morning. I said, what's going on? And he said, well, I've got a warrant. And I said, well, sir, you know, like what it's for? I said, you don't need a warrant, you know, because the records are open, you know, any time. He said, well, it's in the warrant. And, of course, you know, your heartbeat goes up and so forth, and you're trying to figure out what in the world's going on. And I said, well, sir, I said, my parents still not got here. I said, let me go get my parents. We'll come back up here. So I left the store. It was just them in it, but I went down, told my parents. They came on up, and we proceeded then to go back in the office. That's where we had to stay while they conducted their search on records. Now, during this, we had certain firearms around the store, of course, loaded for, you know, protection. And come to find out afterwards, they all had been unloaded. I was carrying a little Kel-Tec 32 in my jean pocket. I was disarmed, even though it, number one, in, which say, our personal property, and then also I had a concealed carry permit, but I was disarmed. Of course, he said it was for everyone's safety. Okay. And our store was closed for 3 to 4 hours while they did this search. Now, we have a gentleman, a good friend of the family, that comes by every day about 9 a.m. after he drops his daughters off at school. And he knows what time we open and so forth. So he comes in front of the store just a few minutes after 9. And as he steps to the door, an agent says, they're closed. And, of course, this gentleman knew better. And he said, I don't think so. So, well, they're closed. Told him what was going on. The agent said, now, we wouldn't want to get anybody hurt. Who's going to do the hurting? So, again, Mr. Zellman, we were closed 3 to 4 hours. During this time, they found the records that they needed. Agent Chittum advised us, my dad and myself, to get attorneys. Now, anyone that faces this, you cannot have the same attorney, because this is federal court, you cannot have the same attorney, nor can you have attorneys out of the same practice. So, therefore, you have to have total separate attorneys. And then we were told we would see the videotapes that they had made of us during this so-called straw buy setup, and we'd discuss it with the U.S. agent.
Okay, well, going from here now, I understand this finally went to trial.
Correct. This was February 2nd of 06. We were indicted. I believe it was no. The indictment came down the end of October of 07, and we had to appear in court to enter our plea. It was around the 14th, somewhere thereabouts, of November of 07. And then our trial eventually came about this past September. I think it was the 22nd, and it went to the 24th.
From the time that they raided you, closed your business, was it closed all that time then?
No, sir. We stayed open. We did close the business the first part of this year. See, when we were indicted, my father and I could not go back in the store. You cannot be around guns or ammunition or, you know, selling, buying, any association at all. So when we got to the first year, and again, from that point in November on, my wife and some very good friends kept the business open for us because this was deer season. Of course, you got the Christmas holiday season coming up. And they kept it open till the first year, and then right after Christmas, we liquidated. We could have went on, but we just could not ask, even though they're very close friends, we just couldn't take advantage of, you know, a friendship like that, even though they would have done it, even on a limited basis. Okay.
Well, why don't we get into the agent's testimony? And you mentioned here that there was a snitch in the trial and what the ATF got the snitch out of and things like that.
The snitch, or where they do it, is confidential informant. In his testimony, he had two DUIs. This agent had went to the courthouse in that particular county and got those charges dropped down to like something like public drunkenness. It was a much lesser charge. I think they even may have went away, period. But I do know if it didn't go away, it was a lesser charge. And also there was some dealings he had done in some drugs and so forth, and that managed to somehow disappear.
What about the agent's testimony? What they were alleging in court or what they were saying? Did they perjure themselves or anything like that?
Of course, he had this, the CI or snitch. In the three tastes that they had, and two were me, one was my father. Of course, was a setup on a straw buy. The way our attorneys attacked it, I said, did you coach them? He said, yeah. He said, I told them what to say and how to say it. So in words, he coached them exactly the way he wanted both the confidential informant and the undercover buyer, who happened to be a Kentucky State trooper, to what to say and how to say it. Also in this videotape, because the videotape that we've seen takes place from where they start at, where they meet up with the confidential informant, driving down to the store and driving back to the meeting place. All that's in the videotape. And one of these tapes, the confidential informant reaches back and gets him a cold one, beer. I can't remember exactly if he popped the top or not. He may have. All right, our attorney said, well, did you know this beer was in there? Yeah. Well, why didn't you do nothing about it? Well, I didn't, you know, but I knew it was there. So between the DUI charges, some drug charges, of course, you know, felonies, again, they managed to disappear. The coaching of the both of them and the other actions that the confidential informant done.
Confidential informant was the Kentucky State Trooper?
No. This was a gentleman that had got himself in a bind, and it's like when he ran into Chittum. In fact, Chittum had managed to buy drugs and guns from him. So then he had the confidential informant, you know, charges coming against him. And it's like, well, what can you do for us?
What part does the Kentucky State Trooper play in this again?
He is the undercover buyer, one that's filling out the form. And the other gentleman is the snitch, the informant.
Leonard, just in the event that somebody doesn't know what a straw purchase is, you want to just take a few seconds to explain that?
Is a person buying a gun for someone that is that this other person that they're buying it for is prohibited by law from owning or possessing. And then what they come back at the dealer is that you know it, and therefore you're guilty.
What do you recommend dealers do if they're served with a warrant or indictment?
Well, first thing is to take a big, deep breath because you think your world's caving in and you're trying to figure out what's going on. Of course, try to find out what's in the warrant. The least you say, the better. Or don't say nothing that you don't have to. Just keep quiet. Just let them get what they want and get out. And then what you'll have to do is get you an attorney and make sure it's a very good defense attorney. And just, you know, you have to see what evidence that they're presenting against you and then what you have to do to fight it.
Well, what steps would you suggest that dealers do within their store to protect themselves from this type of setup by the ATF?
If we go back in the business, I'm going to have one place where the customer will come and fill out the form. I'm looking at video and audio taping, again, for your protection. And then just watch what people say to you, how it's said, and especially if there's two or three or more together. And just watch the language. And if, you know, if it doesn't seem right, just say, hey, guys, sorry. You're going to have to go somewhere else. But and then also on the forms, and this is getting into another area, but we just had a meeting with ATF on the compliance side on the 3rd of this month, the day before the election. And they are really critiquing the forms. I mean, if you miss a date, if, you know, like where were you born, if you write Wisconsin but you leave off Hartford, that's a violation. Address, if it's not a complete 911 address, that's, any little thing that they can find on there that is not right will become a violation.
There is a new market opening up for people who sell special software to firearms dealers to catch all these little gotcha things. This is Talking to America. Our special guest today is Leonard Elliott of the Bacon Creek Gun Shop. And I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. And we're talking about the dirty tricks of the ATF. Leonard, I have another question for you. Who came to your help, your aid, during all of this?
Well, as far as any political organization, nothing from the NRA, nothing from the NSSF. In fact, with the NSSF, I had a little blog where I would send out just updates to people, you know, what was going on with us and keep them informed. And this past summer, I gave an update, and I get a reply, and I don't remember the gentleman's name from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. He was is an attorney for them. I won't want to try to guess the name, Mr. Zellman, because I'd probably be wrong. But the reply was, good luck in your trial. take our name off your list.
Well, that's very supportive. All right.
And I'm thinking, well, you know, we're here on the front lines. We're telling you what's happening out here, and you're not listening. So, I mean, I don't know what else can be done to make the people listen as far as dealers. And in the trial, getting back to Chittum's testimony, one of our attorneys says, well, is ATF targeting dealers to put them out of business? No. But I think, as we all know, that's a lie.
Yes, it certainly is. Something that's really bothered me is that the National Rifle Association does not want to abolish the ATF. The information about the NRA not wanting to abolish the ATF is on our website at jpfo.org. And here's a government agency that's destroying firearms dealers, owners of the Second Amendment.
Correct.
And I suspect with the new administration coming in, the Obama administration, that they won't have any trouble getting their funding or an increase in funding either.
No.
Can we just talk about the jury selection? And
the ATF tried to get a venue change, which means they wanted to move the trial from this area, which in our area, the trial took place in London, Kentucky. They wanted to move the trial to Frankfort, Kentucky. The reason being, they said that my father gave an interview to a paper, one of the local papers here, and they said that polluted the jury pool. So we had a hearing on that back on during the summer. Now, this was on top of this agent coming along every month or so with superseding indictments, which means we had to go back to court, enter a plea, and, of course, then the trial keeps getting moved. And what they're doing there, Mr. Zellman, and especially what they were trying to do to me, and it was aimed at me, was they keep adding on more charges for me to make a deal so I would give in, so to let my father off because of his age. He's in his 80s. You know, what are you going to do to an 80-some-year-old man, you know? But that is another tactic that they will use. They will add on more and more charges. Now, getting back to this venue change, we get into the venue change, which it did not get moved. But during this, the prosecutor has Chittum on the stand and starts asking him questions about the number of NICS checks and traces that we had. Now, this has nothing to do with venue change at all. Okay, so this judge, he's allowing it. So, to make a long story short, it was in testimony that we had the sixth highest number of traces in the state. So when my attorney got to Mr. Hoskins to fill in, my dad's attorney was Gary Crabtree of London, Kentucky, and mine was David Hoskins of Corbin, Kentucky. Mr. Hoskins asked Agent Chittum, per this article, says, well, Agent Chittum, you're familiar with the Eastern District of Kentucky? Yes. And the counties that's involved? Yes. Well, do you work Harlan County? Yes. Well, did anyone say anything about that article up there? No. Well, do you work Clay County? Yes. Well, anyone say anything about the article there? No. And he used two more counties, and the question was no. Nobody had come across and read this article that he was saying that polluted the jury pool. He said, okay, let's go to the traces. You say they're number six in the state. Yeah, that's right. I believe it was number six. Okay, well, who's number one? I don't know. Well, how many traces did number one have? I don't know. Well, who's number two? I don't know. Well, then how many traces did number two have? I don't know. So he had him on the back of his heels, and he didn't like it. But that's another angle that they came with us at. And this, again, was in the venue change where they tried to move the trial. Oh, and one other question was, Agent Chittum, where did you come from? And Miami. Well, who did you work for down there? Yeah, the IRS. What did people think of the IRS down there? Well, they didn't like us too much. Well, who do you work for here? ATF. Well, what did the people think of ATF up here? Said they despise us. So I said, I'm sitting there, yeah, man. You pretty well hit that one right.
Well, at least he was honest, right?
Yeah, he was honest in that one.
Maybe only time in his life or his career, but at least he was honest about
and,
that.
And out of this, out of all this with us and some other matters here that he was involved in, he is now supervisor, got a supervisor job with ATF in Las Vegas. So he got his big promotion.
In other words, if you try to frame people and if you try all kinds of dastardly things and you get a promotion.
Yeah, you get rewarded.
But they lost the case, didn't they?
Yes, sir.
I think that's important to talk about. ATF went through, they spent all this money persecuting you and your dad.
Yes, sir.
And they lost the case.
Yes, sir.
So let's talk about that for a moment.
Okay. As far as the day of the trial, the verdict, of course, we're very emotional. We had a tremendous support there. And had tremendous support all through this from the community, family, local churches, customers, just tremendous. But basically, when the verdict came down, and what I understand, this agent, Chittum, he walked straight out of the courtroom, went over to the elevator, went down the elevator, straight out the door, into his car, and back to Lexington where the... I guess the regional office is, and that's where he had to catch his flight back to Vegas. So they were shocked. They were shocked. We had a very good jury, a jury of our peers, and in that, and that's another point, in the jury selection, three people noted that they were NRA members. They were striked by the government. So if you're an NRA member and you're in court to be put on a jury, the government's not going to choose you. I think that's pretty easy to say.
I wouldn't imagine the government wants anybody who believes in individual responsibility and to be left alone by the government. Do I understand correctly that at some point the ATF wanted you to start snitching on people?
They did ask my father, this was a few months after the indictment, my father and his attorney went, met with the prosecutor at that time, which we wound up with four different prosecutors till they got to the one there that finally took the case on against us. But they reviewed all of the three tapes.
Leonard?
Yes.
Why'd you have to go through four different prosecutors?
The other three apparently didn't want to have nothing to do, you know, with it. And what we were told, till finally this other gentleman, new guy, came in and apparently Chittum bent his ear a little bit and was able to get the indictments on it. See, this raid took place in February of 06. We were not indicted until November of 07, so over a year and a half. And in a federal case, you don't go near that long after an indictment.
Not if you really have a case, I suppose. At this point of your experience now, do you have some plans to go back in the business? Do you have some other advice for dealers?
Well, again, if I do it, Mr. Zellman, it's going to be on a smaller scale, not quite, you know, not near the size of the store that we had. Keeping my pawn business, going to do pawns. Special orders, transfers, if I do that, heavy into ammunition, if you can get it now with everything else going on, as you know. But just going to be more so vigilant on, you know, people coming in, and especially if it's two or three people. You're at the point that you're just going to have to, interrogate the customer. I mean, that's my opinion, because you've got to do everything to protect yourself. That's why I may do the cameras and so forth, you know, just building up firewalls to protect you.
Well, there is another step, I think, that could be taken by dealers, and that is we have to get a lot of dealers together, a lot of gun owners together, to get real serious, more serious than they've ever been in their whole life, to take the steps to destroy gun control in America, mm-hmm. not tolerate it anymore. And I would just like to remind people that we have a free film on the Internet called 2A Today for the USA, which will help you educate other folks as to why the Second Amendment is good for them and the USA. And I think that'll be a big step in destroying gun control once we have more people who are educated, so that they will be more informed about the criminal activities of the ATF. Anything else you'd like to add, Leonard?
Well, getting back to that, the snitch. What they did was, after the tapes, the agent said something to my father. Now, my father didn't answer him. And when my father and Mr. Crabtree got back to Mr. Crabtree's office, he said, "Tom, do you know what Chittum said to you or asked you?" He said, "Well, I think so, because Mr. Crabtree told him not to say nothing in there. You don't write nothing down. You don't make no gestures, no nothing." So when they got back to the office again, he asked Dad, "Do you know what he asked you?" He said, "Well, I think so." And what Chittum asked him was, "Well, what can you do to help us?" And my father told it, Mr. Crabtree, "I ain't helping them do nothing."
Good for your dad.
You know, and that's basically when we ask, we were asked that up at this compliance, you know, when we went up there for November 3rd reviewing some stuff and the forms. And as you know, there's a new form that came out. We complained about what we call, and there's quite a few around here, what we call the stock sales. It happens about once a week or once a month, depending on where you live at. People bring in their livestock and so forth. But there's a lot of, quote, gun trading going on. And these people do it for a living. But nothing's never done. They're not licensed. We mentioned a guy that's been set up here at a local flea market since the Brady Bill. You walk in, lay your money down, walk out. No background check. And so, "Well, give us a name." Well, they're not, number one, they're not going to give you their name. And number two, I'm not going to ask their name. It's not up to me if a person's out there doing something illegal. It's up to the agent. That's what they're there for. But, you know, what can you do to help us? And, oh, yeah, and we're here to help you.
Yeah, the government, we're here to help you.
Yeah, we're here to help you.
Well, Leonard, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
We wish you the best.
Thank you.
And when you're ready to go back in business, let us know and we'll tell the world.
Okay. I will keep in touch with you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Leonard. This has been Talking to America. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest has been Leonard Elliott. I'd like to remind you that you can see our free film at our website, jpfo.org. And also remind you that if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of jpfo.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of jpfo.org.